So there are many stories in the Bible that talk of an angry God. But I don't usually think of God as angry because I'm firmly convinced that the divine presence is a God of love. And while I realize the two, love and anger, aren't mutually exclusive, I don't tend to see God as angry. However, when God looks at the world that God created and called good, and then sees all of humanity's failures, sees us at war with each other, abusing the earth, the rise of authoritarianism, the disregard for human rights, the rich taking advantage of those who already struggle to meet their bills. Don't we think God must be sad and a little angry? And in fact, many, if not most of the stories in the Bible where God is portrayed as angry, it's often because humanity is abusing each other. God thirsts for justice and hungers to fight for and lift up the maligned, the marginalized, and the oppressed. And doesn't God also expect the same from us? We're called to struggle against evil, to resist the temptations that are gripping our nation right now. But it's not just what we fight against. I think it's also important to consider what we are fighting for. We're called to build something better, a peaceful world based in justice, based in love, that provides hope for the future of all of God's children. And it's the vision of just such a world that God offers to the people of Israel through the prophet Isaiah. A world where there is something to drink for all who are thirsty and food for everyone that's hungry. A world where people's needs are met without regard to whether they have money or not. It seems God wouldn't make a very good capitalist, because God's vision is a world without poverty, where people don't have to worry if they'll be able to pay their rent, or whether they can afford to seek health care, or whether the food they eat or the air they breathe is contaminated. God's vision is a world of everlasting covenant where a people committed to God's way of love and mutual support receive the blessings that they need to thrive, whether they have wealth or power or not. God's vision is a world where the people who walk God's way are an example of how things can be for all nations and all people. I think this is also a vision, unfortunately, which we have failed to live out. I look at the world and I feel disappointment and defeat. I wonder when we're going to learn. And we hunger for vision, or for this vision that Isaiah describes. And we thirst for justice. But it's hard to see the path that's going to lead us there. And I imagine that's how the Israelites must have felt when they first heard Isaiah speaking about God's desire for the world. They were a people who were just returning from exile. They had been conquered and oppressed. They may have felt like failures. And although they were finally able to return to their homeland, they were not wealthy. They didn't have riches. Many of them probably didn't know where their next meal was going to come from. But God is a God of second and even third and fourth chances. And into what must have been disappointment and despair, God offers a renewed covenant, telling the people, "Turn to me. Walk my way of love, and you'll not only survive, but thrive. God will care for them, and God will care for us. God will help them and us build a better world, a just world, a world of abundance to be shared among all the people, all the nations. And even those who were corrupt, who had previously perpetrated evil, are welcome," Isaiah says. Because God offers second chances, God offers mercy and pardon. And that's perhaps not what we would offer if we were in charge. Human beings aren't always so forgiving. We live in a nation right now where those in power routinely seek revenge and retribution and relish punishing those who oppose them. And I'm sure each of us has, at some point in our lives, had thoughts of getting even. Yet that's not how God operates. God's thoughts, we are told, are not always our thoughts. God's ways are not always our ways. In Jesus' parable of the fig tree, the vineyard owner wants to cut the tree down because he's come year after year and it hasn't produced any fruit. But the caretaker thinks differently and asks the owner to give it another chance. The owner faces the tree's failure by wanting to destroy it. The caretaker wants to nurture it, believing it still has potential. How do we face failure, whether it be someone else's or our own? And how do we face disappointment? Do we seek to destroy, to lash out in anger? Or do we seek to nurture? Sometimes when we experience disappointment and the world fails to live up to our expectations, we want to find someone to blame. The crowd talking to Jesus asked him about some people who had died tragically, too young and unexpectedly. And they were wondering why it happened. Were they bad people that this tragedy happened to them, they asked. Facing this failure of the world to make sense, they seek someone to blame. But Jesus says that's nonsense. Tragedy is not a punishment for wrongdoing. These things unfortunately happen to everyone. So how does Jesus deal with it? Well, he tells the people to take advantage of God's second chance, saying you'll all come to the same end unless you change your ways. Which I admit that statement is a little confusing because it sounds like he's warning people to change their bad ways or they will also meet tragedy. But he's just finished saying that people hadn't died because they were bad. And so what is he talking about? Well, I believe he's telling us that if we don't change our ways, we'll miss out. We'll miss out on the life that God intends for us. That is the same end, to miss out. We'll come to death having missed the opportunities of life, never having borne the fruits of life we could have, even if we live to be 100. So change, Jesus encourages us. Live abundantly in God. This talk of death is really an invitation to life. It's the same message as the parable of the fig tree. Like those tragic deaths, the death of the fig tree would be pointless. However, nourishing it carries the possibility of new life. Instead of focusing on what we lack, we can focus on the possibilities and the opportunities of life. Instead of wallowing in despair at what is not going how we want it to, we can start talking about how can we give life another chance? What is it we want to build? Can we manifest God's vision for the world where diversity and equity and inclusion create a world of hope and justice for everyone, where everyone has what they need to flourish? Where everyone, not just white men, are valued, respected, and honored. Jesus is telling us that what we focus on in life is what we will manifest in our lives. If we focus on the lack and death around us, we'll come to the same end. We'll find only a lack and more death. We'll cut down the fig tree. But if we turn to God and focus on nourishing life, will create more life. That fig tree is life. Instead of cutting it down, giving up, we can give ourselves another chance and turn to God, the one who nourishes us. Isaiah and Jesus both ask us to get our priorities right. Don't focus on the world's ways, the ways of death, but instead focus on God's ways, the ways of life. Turn and put our trust in God, not for the purpose of avoiding a disastrous death, but for the purpose of embracing life more fully. Facing failure is actually an opportunity. Tragedy and disappointment don't mean we are being punished or somehow unworthy of good things. But facing failure is an opportunity to turn around, to change, to grow, to seek a different path, to seek the God of love and second chances and build something better than what we have. Facing failure isn't a time to destroy the world, but to transform the world. An opportunity to let go of the disappointment of what hasn't gone how we want and to nurture what we still need. In the past, I've reflected on a book called The Leading Causes of Life, which I'm sure hopefully some of you at least remember. And the authors, if you do remember, talk about how our culture spends too much time on preventing death and not enough time on creating and nurturing the conditions of life. And they name what they see as the five leading causes of life, things that we can nurture in and around ourselves in order to have a more abundant life. And so to remind you, the five causes of life, the first is connections, building relationships, relationships with each other, with God, with creation. And the second cause of life is coherence, finding meaning and a sense of belonging. The third is agency, taking action, acting in love and for justice out of the power that's given to us. And we all have some kind of power. None of us are powerless. The fourth cause is blessing, taking time to appreciate and honor the good things that we have in life. And the fifth is hope, putting our trust in God and expecting to find life, an abundant life in our journey. How is God calling us, each of us individually, or maybe us as a community, to nourish the life in our midst? As we continue to move through Lent, I invite each of us to maybe pick one of these causes and nurture it. Let it grow in your life. Connections, coherence, agency, blessing, hope. Each of those causes is also interconnected and interdependent with the others. We won't find just one by itself. Where we find life, we're going to find all of these things. And as we nurture one of them, we'll be nurturing them all. So if we nurture connections, we're also going to find that we're building meaning and belonging. And if we're nurturing a sense of belonging, we're going to find that leads us to act, to help others. God is a God of life, a God always giving us another chance to embrace the wonderful gift of life and to live fully. And when the tree looks barren, as it often does these days, and we're tempted to just cut it down, we're reminded that our ways aren't God's ways. And we're asked to give it another chance, to put our trust in God and nurture life, that there might yet be abundance and justice for all. Amen.